I'm Stephen Toulouse, and I am a security program manager in the Microsoft Security Response Center.
Okay.
We have a very simple mission. Our mission is to protect customers from vulnerabilities in Microsoft software. That's it. I mean, that's our whole mission. And we do that in two ways, primarily. The first way that we really do it is, of course, we work with security researchers and we work with the security industry to work on vulnerabilities that are reported to us responsibly. We change the product, we work with the product teams to produce an update and a bulletin so that customers can be protected. And that's sort of the day-to-day thing that the MSRC does every day. But we also do emergency response. So when you've got something like, Sasser or Blaster, we're the ones who, have the pagers and are waking up everybody and are getting everybody all in the room to work on the problem so that we can provide the remediation to the customers as fast as possible.
Right. Take me through the process. You know, if a security researcher out there or somebody finds a vulnerability, right, that
yeah.
they haven't seen before and they don't think it's been reported, and they send it probably on secure@microsoft.com, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. We man an email alias that gets a lot of email, and that's secure@microsoft.com. That's a public email alias, and that's where the MSRC is. That's a direct interface to us. We've got someone there who is looking at that inbox. We have duty shifts that people rotate in and out, and we're looking at that 7 days a week all year long. You know, whether it's a holiday or whether it's a weekend, we're looking at that alias in case anyone's trying to, you know, contact us or report a vulnerability.
Right. So take us through the process. Take us through what happens when somebody reports a vulnerability, and let's say it's a real vulnerability,
sure.
You know, something like Sasser or something.
Sure, couple of phases there. You know, and it's important to distinguish between Sasser, which was an attack, and a vulnerability, which is actually something completely different. A lot of people don't really make the distinction between an attack and a vulnerability, and so we'll kind of talk about that for a second. But basically, you know, we're looking at this email alias, and it gets, you know, a lot of mail. And so we have to perform a triage function. I sort of joke sometimes that we're kind of like... we sometimes end up like battlefield surgeons. You know, we're there to make decisions about the reports that are coming in as fast as possible so that we can make a distinction on whether something's being reported to us as a configuration error or something is actually a vulnerability in the code. So a piece of email will come in, and what we do at that point is we enter that triage phase where we're taking a look at the information that is coming to us from a security researcher, and we make a couple of judgments based on that. The first is, do we know the security researcher? You know, is this someone who we've worked with a lot, who brings us good stuff? Is this something we've never heard of before? Someone that we might want to engage and really talk to them about their intentions and working with us responsibly to protect people. So there's a couple of things in the reading of the email that are very important. One of the things that is probably the most difficult thing to do is whether or not you have enough information from the initial report to make a judgment call on reproducing the error. Now, if we get a piece of email that says, hey, I found a really bad problem in Windows, that's not necessarily helpful because we don't know what the problem is, what version, we don't know, you know, if it's a configuration error, if it's actually a security vulnerability. So we have to make a decision, you know, at that point. I don't have enough information. I've got to go back to the security researcher and engage them. First of all, we do a couple of things there. We want to let them know we respond to all the mail that is sent to secure@microsoft.com. This is not something that's just he doesn't have enough information. I've never heard of the guy. I'm not going to talk to him. This is the kind of thing we have to get right, you know. So when the mail comes in, we have to make that judgment call that we're going to go back to that security researcher, we're going to introduce ourselves, and we're going to ask them for more information. So they come back with more information. They say, okay, well, I only tested it against Windows 2000, and I only was able to make the machine crash, but I was able to do it remotely, and I was able to do it without a user account. Okay, so that's a little bit more information. Still might not be enough information for us to actually reproduce the situation. So at that point, we have to go back and we have to ask them for an example. What did you do? How did you do it? Did you send a specially crafted packet? Did you make a specially malformed request to a particular service? And then that give and take, that partnership starts with us really engaging with the security researcher and letting them know, we do care about this. You know, we're asking you for this information because we investigate everything that gets sent to us and we want to protect our customers. So if it's something like, an example might be MS-03-026. Now that was a vulnerability in RPC DCOM that the blaster worm then ended up trying to exploit.
By the way, where do you look up these numbers?
I have these numbers in my head. I can rattle off. MS-04007 was an ASN1 vulnerability. We can go back to MS-03007, which is actually a web dev vulnerability. MS-03026 was RPC decomp. So I have a lot of these in my head. But
is there a central place that customers can go and look and use these numbers to see
what's vulnerable? Exactly. Yes, we've got TechNet/security for our IT Pro audience, and that's specifically, you can go there, and that's, they're all numbered by sequentially by year. So, I rattle them off like that because, I had to live a good portion of my life working on them and writing the bulletins. But
there will be a test on that.
But yeah, but
three vulnerabilities by number that you just listed
on. I could do it. Yeah, that's actually not bad. We could have people read it. But that actually gets into a bigger thing that I could talk about in a minute, which is around the bulletins and what we do with them.
That
fits in. Sure. So MS-03-026 was the RPC decomp vulnerability, again, that Blaster tried to exploit. That was brought to us by a group called The Last Stage of Delirium, which is a researcher group in Poland. And they basically came in with an email that said, we found a security vulnerability in your products. Here's some detail about it. We activated at that point. We got the product team together. That's the next phase. If we have enough information from the security researcher to make a judgment call on reproduction of the problem, I can boot up a virtual machine right beside me, and I can try to knock the machine over. I can try to do it. But what's better for us to do is to really engage two separate teams. So the circle begins to widen here. Okay. It can go very quickly from the one person that's looking at secure@microsoft.com very quickly to hundreds and hundreds of people. And what happens is we engage two different teams, the Secure Windows Initiative team, who works with us on reproing the issue, and then the product team, who likewise works on reproing the issue. So you have two teams both working on the same thing. They're reproducing the issue. The product team is reproducing it maybe from one angle. They're looking at the interface. They're looking at the code. They're looking at the components and how they interact. Whereas the Secure Windows Initiative team is looking at it from a more interesting perspective. What's the worst I can do? Are there other ways to do it? Is there something worse than what's being reported here? So having two teams work on it simultaneously is actually the way you want to do it, because you get oftentimes one group finds something the other didn't, and the other finds something the other didn't, and you get a more comprehensive report. Now, in this case, once that was done, we were really working to establish a relationship with these guys, so we came back with information saying, we've reproduced your vulnerability against the following versions. Here's what we're planning to do about it. Here's the timetable we're planning to do about it. And it's really engaging the security researchers in that relationship aspect that is one of the most important things that we do. A lot of people talk about, well, this particular update took a very long amount of time, and we do that for quality reasons. We have to make sure that the updates are of a high quality. But at the same time, people don't realize that every step of the way, if a security researcher has responsibly disclosed a vulnerability to Microsoft, we're giving them updates. We're letting them know the timetables. We're giving them the information to let them, it's not just it fell into some bucket and we forgot about it. We're letting them know it's because of testing. It's because of quality. We could probably put a Windows update on the web in a couple weeks, but if we haven't done the right testing and you install it and it causes problems, no one's ever going to install updates from Windows Update. They're not going to trust them. Yeah. And if I put something up on Windows Update really quickly that fixes a vulnerability but no one actually runs it, it doesn't protect anybody. It's just sitting up there not doing anything. So that's a very important part of the process, is working with the security researcher, that give and take, giving information to and from. And then, of course, there's the engineering process, where we begin the engineering of the update, where we're writing the bulletin on the one hand and the product team is creating the fix on the other. Then there's the testing phase, where we're still working with the security researcher, we're still providing information, and we're still making information for the workaround section, for the bulletin, or whatever. And then the product team is testing. They're making sure that the update is of a sufficient quality that we can release it. And then it all comes together on the second Tuesday of the month, when we release the Windows update, we provide the bulletin, and then everything gets kind of kicked out the door around 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Right.
But the interesting thing is it doesn't really stop there, because, once the update's out, we then turn around and start working directly with product support services in combination with the Windows update team to say, are people deploying it? If not, why not? Is there a problem we didn't know about? Well, let's get the customers to contact PSS. There's a free line they can call for that at 1-866-PC-SAFETY. And a free line that you can call if you're having a problem installing a security patch or believe you have a problem that's caused by a security patch. And so we talk to them directly and we say, is everything going okay? Is everybody deploying the patch? And if we have to make revisions to the bulletin or revisions to the update, we'll do that. You know, we'll go back and we'll make those changes. And then we work again with Windows Update to make sure again that people are applying the update.
Right.
So it's an interesting process. That process can be anywhere from, and it's different for every vulnerability, it could be anywhere from, you know, a month to longer, to 6 months, depending on the quality aspects.